What's going down, everybody? John and Brandon, the Altered State Podcast, episode 88.
The Eric Lindros.
There you go. There you
Pulling in a Hall of Famer.
I like it.
We got some big numbers left.
I was trying to think. This just now popped in my head, and I'm sure you probably won't even know. You might, because it's a Jason Bateman vehicle.
Okay.
Necessary Roughness.
Yes.
Scott Bakula.
Yes.
When he's practicing in the field, he's throwing to number 88. And then in the end, number 88 catches the big game winner.
I do remember that.
The Necessary Roughness episode.
See, 88's a weird number for me. Like, I'm so glad that Eric Lindros repped it, because in recent years, it has been held by some of my all-time least favorite players.
Sure.
You know, you got Patty Kane, you got Brent Burns.
Yep.
Like, I really didn't want to have to fall on either. This would have been just back to a playerless episode if I didn't have Eric Lindros to fall back on. Because fuck Brent Burns and double fuck Pat Kane.
I don't have any. I got no rebuttal for that. That's gospel right there. That's good.
Big facts.
Don't have a tremendous a lot.
Tremendous a lot.
It's an early one.
It is. Man. We are pre noon.
Dude, we have coffee today.
Right? Coffee instead of beer.
That's a different kind of podcast, kids.
Well, what we do have, since we're on the hockey bandwagon already.
Yeah.
Yesterday, Disney Plus launched the Mighty Ducks Game Changers.
Yeah. So you watched
it? So I watched it.
Just the first episode?
Yeah, the first episode came out.
Does it all come out at once, or is it weekly?
Nope, it's weekly. Yeah. The Disney Plus model, which I am very grateful for.
Sure.
How weird is it, by the way, that like we talk about the Disney Plus model of giving us things a week at a time, as if that's not how we lived the vast majority of our lives.
The first 100 years of television, that's how it was.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, there's really only about a 7 or 8 year window of like
binging.
Netflix making original shows and dropping them all at once.
That's right.
Like that's it's
before you had to record it on your VCR and watch them all together.
Right. Or your DVR.
Oh, I'm a VCR kind of person.
Yeah.
I'm a child of the 80s, so, you know.
Right. But I never had a DVR because my parents were like, why would I spend money on a TiVo? No, you want to watch TV? Sit down and watch fucking TV, you idiot.
It's on now, damn it.
Right.
Yeah.
So that, to continue my tangent I'm just feeling old. So I'm a high school graphic design teacher. Yes. Beginning of the semester in my graphic design class, we were just kind of, it was like when no one knew each other yet. So we're just kind of easing into the semester. We're kind of playing some games. And there was this game, that was just recognizing logos.
Okay.
So like they would take the name out of them and we were doing a logo design unit. So I was like, this will be a fun kind of just intro day.
Yeah.
None of the kids knew what the TiVo logo was at all. And then I was like, it's TiVo. And I was like, I understand why you wouldn't know the TiVo logo. And then they all were like, well, what's TiVo? I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch. So Disney Plus.
Yes, sir.
they launched the Mighty Ducks Game Changers. First episode. Fucking adorable.
Awesome. That's good to hear.
It's exactly... Or at least episode one is exactly what I thought the show should be. Like, it's a show, it's 100% a show for kids.
Okay.
You know, like, I had this fear that it was like, oh, it's just going to be trying to get, you know, dudes my age.
Right.
Watching the Mighty Ducks because we grew up on it. And it's like, I appreciate a little fan service in there, but like, I want it to be Mighty Ducks for the next generation. I want young kids to get into hockey the same way children of the 90s fell in love with hockey through the Mighty Ducks. Like, this doesn't need to be a good hockey show. It needs to be a good kids show that features hockey. And this seemed like that.
Okay, cool.
And more importantly, somehow, Emilio Estevez still got it.
He never lost it.
And he hasn't been in shit in what, like a decade?
He does a lot of producing and directing from what I recall.
Does he?
Yeah. Not a lot, but he did some, like, documentaries was his thing there for a while.
Because I feel like, sorry guys, Sean Gallagher texting me in the middle of a mess.
Was he not going to bed yet?
But, now I lost my train of thought.
Emilio Estevez has not lost it.
Before this, I'm trying to think, when was the last time you saw him acting in a thing before this? Like guesting on an episode of fucking Spin City and 2003?
Sure,
like,
sure.
I can't think of anything since then.
Nothing pops in my head. I know he directed, like I said, I know for sure. Well, I forget the names of the movies because they weren't anything major. I'm not a big documentary kind of guy. Well, that's not true. The topic, obviously.
Sure. It makes or breaks that, right. The decision.
I don't have an answer. I think once he... This is my take on Emilio Estevez.
Okay, let's hear it.
Father, extremely successful.
Yes.
Hard shadow to come out from under.
For sure.
Brother, changes his name. Most people didn't even know they were brothers until like Men at Work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They sniffed around it for Young Guns. Still, huge name, tough shadow. Then he marries Paula Abdul, and he's the man for about a year and a half. Do you remember him marrying Paula Abdul?
No, I don't. I didn't know he was married.
Was with Paula Abdul for maybe probably like 10 years.
No shit.
Yes, yes. Then that fell apart, and then she was a train wreck on American Idol, whatever she was on, and I think he, like, faded. He didn't want any part of your brother's a train wreck, your wife was a train wreck, let's talk. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, him and his dad just kind of...
Okay.
I felt like he was even on maybe West Wing a little bit with his dad here and there.
Was he? I never watched West Wing.
I didn't really
know.
Either. I felt like he did more stuff with his dad, obviously, than Charlie Sheen did.
That would make sense.
And I think he even popped up on Two and a Half Men at some point.
Maybe.
I think he'd pop up. He didn't do anything recurring, but I feel like he popped up right. on shit here.
But even
there,
if
but,
you think, yeah. let's say the last thing he popped up on was Two and a Half Men. When Charlie Sheen was on Two and a Half
years
Men,
ago, probably,
yeah, that was like 2010.
That's true.
Probably. Like, I was living in Springfield when he got fired
yeah.
from that show,
yeah.
and I moved out of Springfield and 2011.
Yeah, nothing.
So
if he has done anything, it would probably it's like, you know, direct to video stuff
right.
that we have no idea about. But now I'm curious.
But it was one that like I just when knowing that he's going to be back as Gordon Bombay,
right?
And I think of all of the legacy characters that are going to show up, he is the central one. Like I think he's the only he was the only legacy character in the first episode.
Yeah,
and I imagine that's. Kind of the way, like, I think he will be a regular player
and
in every
guys
episode,
pop up
a big
in an
part,
episode here
yeah,
and
the right. other guys might do a
kind of like the Cobra Kai
spot.
Model.
Yeah.
You know, some of the guys pop up here and there.
Right.
When Johnny's having a rough spot and needs to talk about the good old days or whatever.
Sure.
Here comes Charlie Cox or here comes Goldberg the goalie to
sure.
help Emilio, maybe. Because they showed that picture online.
That had six
yeah,
of the players
yeah.
on it.
He was
but
only,
then again, like, with the exception of the dude whose name all of a sudden I can't think of. Who played Fulton.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's the only actor of those six that, like, has been working.
The guy from Daredevil.
Yeah. And he's been in a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
What is his name? It's something
I
German.
I can't think of his name. I'm going to be pissed when you say it.
Yeah, but, like, the rest of those actors, like, the dude who plays Kenny Wu and Adam Banks and Lester Averman, they haven't shown up in shit.
Yeah.
Connie Moreau did a great guest spot as a comic book publisher in season 2 of The O.C., you know, in 2004.
You know, that's
so,
that thing.
That's the last time I saw her.
Yeah, I was looking at Emilio Estevez's body of work here. The last thing I see was from 2018, and I have no idea what the movie was.
Oh,
I don't recognize it whatsoever. The Way. It has Martin Sheen, so I think he was just a director.
Okay.
But I look at his history, man, and this guy's made some quality stuff.
Hell yeah, dude. And everything he touched, I want to say, from 1980 up until Mighty Ducks 3.
Yeah.
And that's a good
even
16,
like,
17-year run of
even
fucking bangers.
The terrible movies, like Free Jack, is so really... Have you ever seen Free Jack?
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible. It does not flow. But I love watching
yeah,
that
man.
Movie. It's a fun movie.
I mean, he was in Outsiders. He was in Breakfast Club.
Yep. Yeah. Judgment Night. Remember Judgment
yeah.
Night? I love Judgment Night. That was like one of my first soundtracks I ever got to. It had like all kinds of collaborations on it. It was great. And then he did those
cool
Loaded Weapon movies, kind of like the Naked Gun type movies.
That's right.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah. Those were okay. They weren't great, but they were okay. They were okay.
But like he worked consistently in big budget movies for
yeah.
close to 2 decades. You know, it was
yep.
like, what was his first big role? You know, Breakfast Club's probably what, 82, 83?
85.
85. Outsiders is probably right in that same ballpark.
It would have been a little before that, probably. 83, yep.
Okay, so let's say he started...
St. Elmo's Fire, 85.
Yeah, so he's a legitimate name, 83. By 85, he's big time.
Yep.
And Mighty Ducks 3 comes out probably, what, 97?
Mighty Ducks 3?
Yeah.
Oh.
I would guess that's 97.
96.
Really?
96, yep.
They must have, like, stacked those movies. I think the first one was, like, 93.
D2 was 94. Mighty Ducks was 92.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. Young Guns was 88. Young Guns 2 was 90. I mean, he was...
But yeah, so, like, he's in big shit for 12, 15 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden just wasn't. Like, I think Mighty Ducks 3 is the last... The most recent thing that I can think of that he was, like,
a
big part of.
He was in the first, like, 5 minutes of the first Mission Impossible movie. Remember that? And he gets crushed in the elevator.
I don't remember
that. He was, like, the tech guy. He was hacking into stuff. He was on the top of an elevator, and the elevator squashed him.
That was Emilio Estevez?
That was Emilio Estevez. Yep. Yep.
No shit. I haven't seen...
Probably his last big movie.
Right. Well, I haven't seen the first Mission Impossible probably since I was in middle school. I never loved those movies.
Me either. I enjoyed the first couple, but now there's, what, 8 or 9?
Yeah, I haven't seen any since Mission Impossible 3.
Oh, yeah, he was in Machete Kills.
I didn't see Machete Kills.
Oh, because Machete and the Machete Kills was like a sequel.
Danny Trejo is a fucking treasure.
Well, Machete Kills, the big bad guy is Carlos Estevez, Charlie Sheen.
No way.
He plays the big drug lord as Carlos Estevez. It's great.
That's hilarious.
It's great. Yeah, yeah. I don't remember Emilio Estevez's role in it, but yeah, he's definitely in there. That's funny. Yeah, he was just looking back. And then tons of cartoon stuff, you know, all the voice animation stuff. Looks like he's been doing that.
He's done a fair amount of voice acting?
Yeah, early 2000s, 2012. Huh. Nothing I recognize. A lot of Christmassy stuff.
No shit.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was on his on the old CV.
Me either. Me either. Yeah, I don't recognize most of this most of that stuff as far as the voice acting goes, but
so either way.
Married to Paula for 2 years. 92, 94. I don't want to mess him up.
Only the Mighty Ducks years.
That's right. Yeah. Imagine that. Money dried up and there goes Paula.
Hey man, that Disney money spends, buddy.
That's right. That's right. You think MC Scat Cat sold her away?
But
it's funny because that was like her big time too. So they were very good for each other, obviously. What the hell happened?
She was bigger before that. She wasn't still big in 92.
I guess she was still late in the 80s, right?
Yeah. Yeah, like by true. Like 92, she was pretty washed up.
Yeah, but she's forever your girl.
Nah.
Oh, that's the right, kids. That's a Paula Abdul reference. It's early. It's early. It's early. What else we got? What else we got?
But yeah, like, so going into it.
I'm sorry, yes.
I really didn't know what to expect out of him. Just haven't seen him in so long.
Fair, yeah.
He was fucking great, man.
Now, from what I read, he kind of plays the Hans.
Yeah,
role,
so
right?
So like the first episode, it's like, so it's taking place in Minnesota, and the Mighty Ducks are they're the Hawks.
They're the Hawks now,
like
right,
they
sure.
are 10-time state champs, and they're like running this whole elite fucking camp and shit. And did you ever watch Letterkenny?
No.
Oh. So one of the, I can't think of their names, but there's the two hockey douches that are so funny in Letterkenny. The blonde one plays the coach of the Ducks in this.
Okay.
So it's just like, just seeing him is like, oh buddy. Oh, this makes me smile. Then the one kid like has played for the Ducks for the last like 5 or 6 years, but now they're like going to the next age bracket and he gets cut from the team. And his mom is the mom from Gilmore Girls.
Okay.
And she's like a paralegal, and all of the other kids' moms are like the lawyers and shit. So they're all like real condescending towards her. And they're all condescending towards her son and shit. So when he gets cut, she makes a big scene and she's like, we're going to start our own team.
Right.
And so like the kids have to recruit, you know, the ragtag bunch of misfits.
Yeah.
But they need a home rink to play on. That's part of the deal. Like, if you make a team, you got to have 6 players, a coach over 21, and a home rink.
The rules.
So, mom, you know, was really, really trying to find a rink. And none of the rinks have ice time. But then she stumbles upon the Ice Palace, owned by Gordon Bombay.
Of course.
But it's not listed anywhere because he hates hockey. And there's no hockey allowed at his rink.
Love it.
So she shows up and she convinces him with a paycheck. She's like, I'll pay for ice time. He's like, fine, bring your team. I'm grumpy Gordon Bombay and right. I fucking hate hockey.
Right, right.
I'm
Mr. Ducksworth now.
Exactly.
Yes.
Like such a fucking
right.
grouch.
Right. Quack, and then quack, like, quack, Mr. Ducksworth.
Yeah. And then, so the first episode ends with, like, the team taking the ice for their first practice on at the Ice Palace. But Gordon Bombay plays a great fucking curmudgeon.
Let me ask you this.
He's exactly the character he was in Mighty Ducks 1.
Perfect, like, perfect.
He aged backwards.
Right, right.
Like, yeah. He's just such a grouchy shithead that hates hockey.
Is the limo driver in it? He was one of my favorite characters.
Well, that's what I clearly, in all of this, he's going to re-find his love for hockey.
Of course, yeah.
As he did in Mighty Ducks 1.
That's right.
But I'm also hoping that there's, like, and there's definitely going to be a subplot where, like, him and the mom hook up, like, right, like he did with Charlie's mom.
Right.
That's for sure. That's his MO.
That's what he does.
Yeah, he likes banging hockey moms.
He's that coach.
Yeah, yeah. He wants to bang hockey moms. Why do you think he's still in the game?
Right. Divorcee hockey moms. That's my story.
Can't wait.
That's right.
But then there's also, like, I think there's the very clear subplot where, like, this woman is, like, the only honest person at her firm. Because all the lawyers are clearly assholes that just love money.
That's right.
And she's the paralegal, and she does all their bitch work, look down on her. That's She works so much harder. But, like, if we recall, Gordon Bombay was a lawyer in Mighty Ducks 1. So I'm really hoping for a subplot of him, like, showing up in the courtroom and being like, you're now partner at my new firm.
Right.
And we're launching the Bombay Law Firm, the Minnesota Miracle Man.com.
I still remember.
I want to see that subplot.
Too bad we're not going to get a sweet, like, North Stars cameo like we did in the first one. not a team anymore. Not a team. Oh, well.
But the Minnesota Wild, on their reverse retros, are rocking the North Stars colors, and they look so sick.
Two of my favorite jerseys such a sick. Of all time that aren't blues, North Stars and the Whale.
I mean, yeah,
the Hartford Whaler. Great jerseys, man. Great jerseys.
The one that I love, the sweater that just absolutely still enamors me is the Quebec Nordiques one.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Love that sweater. And then this year, when the NHL is doing the reverse retros, the Avalanche, who used to be the Nordiques, their reverse retro is the Nordiques sweater in the Avalanche colors.
Okay.
So it's like cream with maroon and navy. Looks so sharp to the point that I was like, I might want to buy that, but Stan Kroenke owns that team.
Well, then you can't.
So I was like, now I can't.
Yeah, that sucks.
But I want to.
Yeah.
Because I was watching the.
That's a bummer.
There was that Lake Tahoe game a few weeks ago, and they played the Knights, and they were wearing it there. And it's like on the outside rink, that sweater and those colors, like, so sharp.
See, it's a conundrum like that where I fear one day, Vin Diesel is going to be the star of one of my favorite movies, and I'm just going to have to.
You're going to have to live with it.
I only bring this up because right before I came over here, I was, you know, doing a little note-taking. And someone noted in there, they didn't say how or what the role would be, but he may be appear as him or as a person in the next Guardians. Just maybe as a, not as Groot, obviously.
Right.
But we don't need to see that, do we?
Do I need to see it? No.
What's...
Is it going to bother me? No.
Yeah, it bothers me.
Of course it does. Because when he's Groot, you can just act like he's not in the movie.
It's not. Right, right. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Anyway, that's enough ED. Moving right along. You watch episode 2, Little Falcon Winter Soldier?
I did.
And?
Me too. I very much enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, but I'm not... I think it's still suffering a little bit from the Wanda hangover.
Right.
It's not bad by any means whatsoever, but nothing has been like, ooh, look at that.
Well,
or...
I think what it is, it's not just like, I feel like what WandaVision did, on top of like being a wonderful show, and like, I am very much the audience for that show, as kind of we've covered, but what it did was it successfully showed a new side of the MCU.
Sure.
Like, that, it felt very much like kind of the turning of a page, and this feels like the MCU that we've always seen. So it's like, it's good. You know, the old MCU stuff is very good.
Right.
And this is equally as good, but it feels like you just turned the page to something cool and new, and then you're already going back to playing your greatest hits.
Right.
And it's like,
I know. And it's still early. I'm not judging this by any means. By the time it's done, I'm sure I'll be very pleased with the overall product, but it's just a different vibe.
Right. It's not
it's a different way of telling a story.
Well,
so
it's the same vibe is what it is. It's the same vibe as what they did for 15 years, and they broke free of that with WandaVision. And right. I kind of just wanted to see... I wanted to see that thread pulled a little bit further before we came back to kind of the traditional action story.
Right. I'm with you. I saw that. I know it's a podcast and the people can't see this, but I'm going to show you. Did you see this? You know, I'm a big Ska guy.
Yeah.
The Less Than Jake WandaVision collaboration.
No.
Little Hello Westview.
Oh, it's that's
the Hello
awesome.
Hello Rockview album cover. It's perfect, right?
That's awesome.
I thought it was perfect.
I love that.
I thought it was hilarious. It's on Less Than Jake's Twitter page. If you guys want to check it out, it's just like Vision holding on to the outside of the house, like on the Hello Rockview album cover. I thought it was perfect. That's great. Once again, when the things you love come
when
together.
When worlds collide.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic.
But that's like, I think this episode was definitely superior to episode one.
Most def. Yeah.
Their interaction was
great. I love, yes, you know, the staring contest type stuff and that, you know, and then but it's serious and it's silly. It's
right.
Great.
That was a really good balance of like fucking with each other like boys, but also being like, no, dude, like I'm fucked up.
Right. But he's crying at the same time.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love that they're bringing in Isaiah Bradley as a kid. Like, I think there's a lot fucking there.
Sure.
To pull from.
I mean, not obviously, but I think, you know, in order to kind of relate it to today's world, they're going to go with the racial aspect of...
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, a black superhero 40, 50 years ago and no one told anybody about it and that kind of shit, that's...
Well, I also think if you're the MCU...
And then what happened right after that...
Right.
You know, I mean, that's obviously where they're going with that, which I think is a very...
Oh, I think it's important
good
to...
Good move, yes.
Because I think, for a number of reasons, I think it's important to have that conversation... But just from a logistics standpoint, if I take my emotion part out of it, which is, you know, I think that's an important topic for the world to be approaching. But taking that out of it, just on a sheer storytelling standpoint, if you are like, what makes Marvel work, whether it be in the comics or in the movies, is that they tell very human stories with superhuman characters.
Right.
Like, just like, say, if we look at WandaVision, that entire show, yes, it was about superheroes, but it was about grief, right? And you can go through everything they've done, and there is those deep allegories in all of their content. And when we look at race relations, that's a topic they haven't quite touched yet. So there's a lot of storytelling that can exist there. That's not just rehashing what they've already done well.
Sure.
So sheerly from a storytelling standpoint, that's the place you have to go.
Sure.
And then throw on top of it, the world that we live in, where that is very clearly still a very raw wound in a lot of communities, you know, not just the African-American community.
Sure.
That's an open wound in a lot of places. So I think you can, I think you can create some good, even if it's just allowing a conversation to happen, but you can also just narratively tell a better, more interesting and engaging story by having, you know, you have the idea of the black sidekick,
mm-hmm.
and especially with Battlestar coming into it as well. Like, you have this idea of the black sidekick only being able to be the sidekick. You have this idea of Captain America existing while Steve Rogers was on ice, but no one could know about it because he was a black man.
Sure.
Like, there's a lot there that's much bigger than superheroes. That I think, if told correctly, can be very, very good.
Sure. Which I think Marvel does very well, I think.
Right. I think
they have
know,
with their books and things like that, I think. So.
Right. Well, I mean, you think about it, like, they've been doing this from the beginning. Like, the X-Men is an allegory on racism.
Absolutely.
Like, Marvel's been doing this from the beginning.
Right.
And I think one thing... I haven't looked at who's behind the scenes on Falcon and Winter Soldier yet, but I feel like a real strength of Marvel Studios is that they have consistently put the right voices in charge of writing and directing to make things... work, you know.
Sure.
I think there's a lot of stuff that they do just kind of intelligently with that. So I would trust that they put that writer's room is diverse and is experienced and is capable of telling a story about superheroes that's also about race, that's not preachy but is also poignant. You know, like, sure. I think there's a lot of plates to spin to do that correctly.
Yeah.
And I trust Marvel to be able to do that.
I'm with you there.
I love that they brought in, I can't think of the actor's name. She played Enfys Nest in Solo, and she was kind of like the leader of Flag Smasher in this.
Yeah, I recognize Kelly her, but I don't something. Know her name either.
I can't remember her last name. Yeah. I think her first name's Kelly. But I love the idea of taking like kind of the brutish character and like refacing it as this young female activist,
right,
who's trying to do right and doesn't see herself as a villain.
Yep.
And then we also see like Power Broker kind of in the background, who's really going to be the villain.
Yep.
And I think you can see like Flag Smasher is already trying to get away from Power Broker. And that's how Jonathan Walker is going to end up getting powers, is through Power Broker. Sure. Like, he's going to turn into a villain out of this for sure. At least he has to, because they've just done such a good job of making him so fucking douchey.
Right.
Very punchable face.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that jaw.
And it's hard to have a... Like, that's the daughter of Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell, for dear's sake. The daughter of. Yeah. The son of.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was a goddamn hockey player, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, that jaw.
How did they make him so punchable?
I know. I don't get it. I mean, I don't have an answer for that one either. Kate Hudson turned out pretty nice.
Yeah. Well, Kate and Ollie, Kurt's not the real dad.
That's true. That's true.
So it's Kurt's genes that we can blame.
Snake Plissken. Yeah, that's all I got for Falcon Winter Soldier, really. I mean, I'm digging it. I think it's going to be a fun ride. It's, you know, it's what I've come to expect from Marvel, so I'm not upset with it whatsoever. I look forward to the new episodes.
At like two episodes in, each episode has a pretty significant action sequence. Mm-hmm. So I do think, again, like, I think there's a part of it that, yes, it's very much like what Marvel is used to doing over the last 15 years or so. So they've kind of hit their stride on doing those action scenes, but it's also like, boy, did they spend some fucking money on this show.
Yeah.
Like, if we're going to have six episodes and each one is going to have, I mean, shit, the first one he's flying around fighting helicopters. Well, the second one, there's a whole train battle.
You got to think, they can probably spend...
That shit ain't cheap.
You know, action scenes and CGI-wise, you can probably have the same amount of budget as you would an Avengers film, but you're not putting all those motherfuckers in it, so you don't have this monster million-dollar stars coming in to take up all the money. So you can still use...
You're probably not spending the same budget on marketing, like, shit.
Absolutely
Avengers,
not.
Right. I bet... Avengers Endgame marketing was probably $75 million.
Oh, I would
just to market it.
Sure.
Like, not even...
Maybe even more.
Yeah.
$100 million would not surprise me one bit worldwide.
Right. Just to be your marketing budget.
Right. Because I can picture walking down, you know, New York, Tokyo, whatever.
Once upon a time when we could walk around outside.
Right, no shit. When you could walk down streets, lined. It's all Avengers stuff. It's all Endgame type stuff. It's always in your face months on end.
Yeah.
Not to mention... What they go through at Comic Cons. I mean,
oh God, yeah.
$20 million to do a Comic Con with all the people they bring in and out and shit like that. So,
and I mean, also, I think the age of COVID not only saves money on that part of it, like, just because big gatherings aren't happening, so you're not putting budgets into those, but also like the talk show and podcast circuit that you would be sending people on, everyone's calling in and zooming into those anyway. So you're not paying to fly your stars.
That's right.
Cross country seven times in a week, you know, like, I mean, shit. So how many times do you have your stars? Like, all right, you got to be in L.A. today. You got to be in Chicago tomorrow. You got to be in New York the day after Then you got to be back to L.A. Then you got to be to fucking Florida.
You know, and you're not just flying them. You're flying usually their assistant. You know, maybe four or five people with them.
Right.
You know, so
and putting them up in a suite, flying them first class, like that.
That's what I'm saying. Foods. I mean, you're saving a lot of money, a lot of money. So make a cool fight scene.
Right. It is. I still just think, I do think this does suffer a little bit also. Like, I would be interested to know what, I haven't researched more what prompted this to happen, but like, originally, when all of this was happening, before COVID kind of delayed a bunch of stuff, Falcon and Winter Soldier was supposed to be the first Marvel thing to hit Disney Plus. It was supposed to be before WandaVision.
Right, which is why I think they don't reference it at all. Because this is supposed to take place after WandaVision.
Right, and like...
Wouldn't you mention, hey, that was crazy what Wanda did.
Yeah.
You know, at some point.
Well, and like, as you watch it, I just feel like tonally, it fits old Marvel more than new Marvel.
Totally.
And I think if you look at where Marvel is headed this year, as far as saying like, yes, Black Widow already should have happened, so let's throw that out too. But let's say what would have happened following WandaVision would have been Eternals, would have been Shang-Chi, would have been
Strange.
Spider-Man Multiverse, would have been Doctor Strange Multiverse. Right. So like,
it would have flowed a little
really
more,
leaned into like the magical aspect.
Right.
And how it was supposed to be would have been like last year, Black Widow would have come out, which I'm assuming is going to fit kind of old Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And then Falcon and Winter Soldier would have followed it. So like, you would have had those two things really playing nicely together.
Sure.
And then WandaVision kind of kicks off the next phase.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, with Infinity War, Avengers, the worlds get bigger and bigger because you're, you know, WandaVision, the worlds are kind of bigger and bigger. And then you kind of go back to American superheroes.
Yeah.
You know, just, we're, you know, we're fighting all over the, but Earth.
Right.
Or what do you want to call it? But I know every time I say something, I feel like I'm criticizing it, but I'm not whatsoever. It's
right. I think it's good.
Yes.
It's a hard act to follow.
Absolutely.
It just came off of
and it's not,
the thing.
And I don't know what it is yet.
Right.
You know what I mean? With it just being two episodes, I can't say, oh, these two episodes are better than WandaVision. No.
Yeah.
Because it's not a complete project yet. I can't say
for
anything
sure
about it. So, you know, we have a weekly podcast, so we have to talk about it. But I don't want anybody to think, don't go see this. Don't see this. This is still
for sure. I look
well
forward to it every
seeing.
Friday.
Absolutely.
I watch a day of just like out of excitement, not out of like, oh, I have to do this.
If you take anything from this podcast, go see Falcon Winter Soldier. Do not see Vin Diesel.
But yeah, man, I do think I'm going to do a little bit of research into that because I do think if 2020 would have allowed us to have Black Widow and this, and then 2021 would have launched with WandaVision, I think we would be singing a very different tune.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to put in my head. Like, you can't put that cat back in that box. Like, it's like WandaVision happened.
Right.
And it was just that's the version of Marvel I want to see right now.
Right.
It's like, I don't need this one anymore.
Right.
This one has become less cool to me. Because the thing that is cooler to me has already started.
That's right. That's right. It's, yeah. And it's nothing it did wrong. It's, you know.
For sure.
It's just, it is what it is.
It
right
is
now.
What it is.
That's right. Do we want a quick break before we get into anything else?
Yeah, let's take a little pause.
All right, cool.
Hey, man, it's me, Kevin Smith. Check out alteredstatecomics.com right now. I will wait. But while I'm waiting, I'm going to also tell you, go check out the Altered State podcast, man. They come straight out of St. Louis, Brandon and John, and they are there for all your pop culture needs. They're very orally accented, is what I'm saying, ladies and dudes. So there you go, man. AlteredStateComics.com. It's right there in the name.
And we're back.
Okay, so on the little break here, you're chatting about Mr. Mayor.
Correct.
Love some Ted Danson, as I know
right?
you do.
100%.
And Bobby Moynihan, maybe even more so. I was just thinking as we're talking, is there any other actor who... This is going to sound like a shitting on Ted Danson kind of thing. I'm not. I like Ted Danson.
You fucking better not
but
shit on Ted
Cheers,
Danson in this house.
What has he done that's big?
Becker?
That's big.
That shit ran 10 seasons, bro. Like... It,
yeah, but
we
so
were
like,
the audience for it.
So did Wings on USA Network. It ran like 20 seasons. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
And people loved it.
Yeah,
we weren't the audience, but Becker was fucking big.
I never saw it. I couldn't tell you either way.
Becker was big.
Okay. But that was 20 years ago.
The Good Place that just happened.
Oh, I did forget about
seasons,
that. I forgot about
that's
that.
That's a wonderful show.
See, I was just like, I felt like he was just treading on Cheers for the longest time.
Yeah.
Like, he's done nothing bigger than that, which is not a stab, because who really...
Cheers is...
One of the biggest shows of all time.
Yeah,
yes,
like,
yes.
I think, objectively, is top five, maybe top three biggest sitcoms of all fucking time.
I think this is where, not to say Ted Danson failed, where he got held up, he was still of that ilk back in the TV days that it was hard to go from TV to movies. You were a TV actor.
He was a television actor.
He was a television actor and then did a couple movies, 3.5 minutes or 3 Men and a Little Lady and 3 Men and a Baby.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that made a couple bucks. And then I think he tried to do more of that and it just didn't work.
Yeah, he couldn't.
And then he
kind of
came back
jump,
to TV.
And that was back when.
And I felt like it still, like, at that point was still kind of held against. Like, couldn't make it. Could make it the pros back in the minors.
Right. And I think that held against him in his film career for sure.
Yeah. No, because having said that, in Curb Your Enthusiasm, he's great.
Yeah.
I do love that. So that's,
and like,
that's still fairly
and
new.
You are totally right. That was an era in which TV actors were TV actors.
Right.
And film actors were film actors.
Right.
And you didn't cross mingle.
Like, did anybody think Woody Harrelson would be the breakout star of Cheers? The
right?
only one who would last in,
right?
the, in the movies.
Yeah. Kirstie Alley had a short run.
Very short.
In the 90s of,
yeah.
of being a movie star.
Yep.
But like I think if we're just talking relevant actors, like, sure, he hasn't done anything bigger than Cheers. But again, Jerry Seinfeld hasn't done anything bigger than Seinfeld.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know,
fair
like
enough,
yeah. we're because he's like Cheers is in that category.
Right.
It is in like it is
right.
It is objectively.
Comedians and Cars Getting Coffee is fantastic.
Yeah, but it ain't Seinfeld.
It's not Seinfeld. Well, it is Seinfeld.
Right. But so like I think it. To judge anything against Cheers is just...
It's harsh. I'm not
it's
saying...
It's harsh.
Know, it is. It is.
Because it's, you know...
But I think
it's
that was
in
his,
that category.
And I don't mean to judge. I just mean, I think that's where the industry, per se, as I throw up air quotes, push back
but,
against, you know...
Sure. The, but like, you can think of... Say we were just talking about Emilio Estevez, who hasn't even been on something
right.
in 15 years... But like, if you look at Ted Danson, say he was on Cheers for 11 years, then does a few movies. Right after that, does Becker for 10 years. Then he did Bored to Death on HBO for 3 years, and then he did 4 years of The Good Place.
Yeah.
Like he has consistently had something on.
Yeah.
Since before I was born,
it's funny.
And like, there's not very many actors that can say
no,
that.
Not at all, not at all. Just talking, all of a sudden, I felt. The podcast went from, oh, we talk about young things to Ted Danson and Emilio Estevez. And like, we just lost a right. huge demographic. Everybody's like, who
Dude.
The fuck are these guys talking about? Ted Danson and Emilio Estevez?
So speaking of that and just feeling old. So it's like 2 years ago. I do a lot of shit with the thespian troupe at school.
Yeah.
And so we did a program. Like I worked on a show. I guess, yeah, it's like 2 years ago. And we had one girl who, for all 4 years that she was in high school, her thing was, like, working the booth for the shows. Like, she did lights, she did sound. And, like, that's the type of thing that, like, kids would typically kind of, like, fall into.
Right.
This was a rare thing where, like, as a freshman, she was like, no, this is what I want to do. And she did it great for all 4 years, right? So then at, like, thespian senior night where they're leaving, everyone gives her a little speech on stage. And she was like, I want to give my goodbye speech from the booth. And we were like, right on. And then the booth has the controls to everything.
Yeah.
So the show was over. I yelled out. I was like, hey, program's over. You got to have your Sam Malone moment. And everyone looked at me like, what are you fucking talking about? I was like, you know, she's got to cut the lights out one last time as the program's over. And they're like, what are you talking about? And I'm standing here.
Post Malone?
Right. Yeah. I'm standing here on stage like, you know, Sam Malone.
Oh, my God.
Ted Danson. Cheers. And they're all, and the one kid goes, Brunts, you realize I was born in 2000, right? It's like, fuck you, kid.
I go off the air in like 88.
Right. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Fuck you, kid. Go home. I'm done with you.
That's right. That's right. That's hilarious. That's,
yeah. I just wanted her to have her Sam Malone moment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Bar's closed.
Exactly.
That'd be fantastic.
And
be fantastic.
Ted Danson was also in Hearts Beat Loud. Which was one of my favorite movies of like 4 years ago, 3 years ago.
Don't know it.
It was Nick Offerman. Nick Offerman and Kiersey Clemons play a father and daughter, and he owns a record store, and she's getting ready to go off to college, and Ted Danson owns a bar.
This sounds vaguely familiar, like we've talked about it before.
Probably, because
okay.
I love it.
Okay.
And Ted Danson owns a bar, and is Nick Offerman's good buddy, and he's a big pothead. And they go and they hang out at the bar all the time.
Okay.
So he's kind of Sam Malone again.
Nice. Good for him.
So anyway,
I gotta
watch Mr. Mayor.
Absolutely.
Because Bobby Moynihan fucking crushes it.
Sure. We're talking about Cheers.
Mm-hmm.
takes place in Boston.
Yeah.
I got a little Boston news.
Oh. Just
a little minor Boston news.
Let's hear it.
I'm a huge Celtics fan.
Indeed.
Love me some Larry Bird.
Uh-huh.
I'm a huge comedy fan. I like Bo Burnham. Bo Burnham is playing Larry Bird.
No way.
In a new movie. Yes. Yes.
Wow.
I was fucking thrilled to see that.
Yeah. I love Bo Burnham.
Me too, man. Me too. Not only that, but he has been great since day one.
And yeah.
Part of me hates that about him. Because even as a kid on YouTube, like, that's a fucking funny, catchy tune.
Yeah.
Now it's even better.
I hate him because he's my age. And I remember.
Right.
Well, I remember when he came out. I was. It's when me and Nathan Gibby were living together.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm 19 years old. We got our apartment downtown. Feel good. And I flip on Comedy Central and his first little thing's on. And I laugh my ass off. And I go out and buy the CD at Best Buy because that's how. Because to tell you how long ago this was, you know, I'm 19 years old. I go buy the CD at Best Buy, and I look at it. I was like, this motherfucker is 18 years old.
Yep.
And
it hurts.
And crushing it.
Yeah.
And has just continued to.
Yeah.
His whole career. Everything he's done.
You know, even just directing stuff.
Yeah, dude. Did you watch Eighth Grade?
I did. Very good.
That movie was hard to watch.
Yes. Yes.
Because I don't know that I've ever seen anything encapsulate like preteen awkwardness that perfectly. Like watching it, I felt like I was in seventh grade again.
Yeah.
In like the worst way. It was one of those like, it's a wonderful, wonderful movie, but I will never watch it again. It was like I watched it as it happens, like, you did a great job, and I am too uncomfortable to sit through this feeling again.
Agreed.
I grew out of this.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you know this? Is this going to be like a? It's going to be an HBO either show or movie. I'm not sure. Maybe HBO Max. I'm not sure. Adam McKay is directing it, so I don't know if it's a comedy. I would assume on some level.
But he's done. You know, he did like The Big Short. He's done some non-comedy stuff.
Yeah. So I, you know, let's see.
Bo Burnham's done some non-comedy. Like, yeah, with both of those names, it's like this could be a really funny show, or this could be just a really good show.
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't fucking know.
I was gonna pull up. See who I know. He's had some other people in here. Doesn't say what parts they're playing, but other top stars for this. We got Sally Field. We got Adrian Brody. We got John C. Reilly.
Huh.
It looks like it's gonna be fun.
When's next coming out?
It does not say. 2022.
Okay.
It does say, yes.
I'll be interested to see that.
Yeah. You know, even John C. Reilly doesn't tell me once again, is this a comedy?
Exactly.
Is this a, you know, everybody they're putting in there, it's like they could film two different movies and just cut both of them in the editing room and make one comedy and one serious, and you'd probably get two good movies.
Right.
Like with those people doing what they do.
For sure.
That could easily be a, you know, mockumentary type style, you know, Magic versus Bird kind of bullshit crazy thing, or it could be very serious.
Serious like a racial expose thing. You know, it could be one or the other, or it could be both.
It could be both, right? Yes, you're right, yeah.
You know?
Like Dewey Cox. No,
right. Man, speaking of John C. Reilly, that brings me around to what I am most excited for this week that keeps like slipping my mind because we're in a world where we don't go to theaters for things like this.
Right.
Fucking Godzilla vs. Kong drops on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's going to be cool.
I'm so pumped.
I'm actually getting more pumped for that than I thought I would.
Dude, did you go back on HBO Max and watch Kong Skull Island?
I have not. I'm planning on doing that today or tomorrow.
So that's what John C. Reilly's in that, which made me think of this.
Yeah.
Kong Skull Island was so much better than it had any right to be. Like, I sat down to watch it thinking, like, I love Godzilla. I've never much cared about King Kong. Like, I don't know why they play in the same sandbox, but like King Kong's never been of any real interest to me. But I was like, oh, they're building out a universe. Of course I'll watch Skull Island. And I went into it thinking like, all right, this will probably just be an okay action movie. No, man, it's a really fucking good movie. And John C. Reilly is wonderful in it.
Always.
So yeah, like when that, I was talking to someone at work yesterday and he was like, we were talking about the Snyder Cut, and he was like, oh, yeah, and this week is Godzilla vs. Kong on HBO Max. I was like, wait, holy shit, you're right.
I know.
I can't fucking wait.
It's like, I feel like for the whole rest of the year, there's always something new every week.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
we're only
2 weeks away from fucking Mortal Kombat on HBO Max.
Yep.
That's going to be dope.
Yep. Agreed.
But what we are further away from is Black Widow.
That doesn't surprise me.
Once again.
Yeah.
What surprised me about it, so like, you know, we've had for a year now, we've been talking about, Black Widow will come to Disney Plus. And so it doesn't surprise me that they were like, we're going to add it to Disney Plus for the premium access, $30 mm-hmm. the day it comes out in theaters. That doesn't surprise me at all. That worked for Raya and the Last Dragon. But it does surprise me that they're doing that and pushing it to July.
Yeah, that one
like,
I didn't get.
Yeah, like right. I was like, because I feel like by July, theaters are just going to be open or the entire industry's done.
Right.
You know, like if we can't be showing, if we can't have pretty full theaters by July, we're fucked.
Agreed.
Well, at that point, we'll be 6 months into people getting vaccinated.
Right.
We'll be in warmer weather. We'll have done a good job of figuring out mask wearing and shit. Like,
here's the problem. We, as in the United States, probably won't be watching anything. Other countries may have packed theaters, which is why they're pushing it.
You're not wrong.
Unfortunately.
But it just seems to me like, I feel like the move, instead of pushing everything back again, because the Black Widow took Shang-Chi's spot, then Shang-Chi is taking Eternals' spot, then right. Eternals is back again, I think. I think Eternals that moved to 2022 now.
I kind of stopped paying attention because I feel like it's going to change again.
Yeah.
Give me a month notice and I'll be there.
Yeah. But to me, it's like, if you're going to include the premium access shit, then just keep it in fucking May.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point here? Right. What's the end game of pushing it back another 3 months just to still do it digitally anyway? Like, right. I feel like the people, I don't think anyone is going to be more comfortable in July than they are in May. That I think if you have the option to watch it at home or watch it in a theater, I think there is the person who's like going to watch it at home on Disney Plus has already decided they're going to do that because they're like, I just don't feel like, maybe they don't feel like going to the theater. Maybe right. it's not even a COVID thing. They're just like, oh, right. I get the option. I'd right. rather sit on my recliner and make right. my own popcorn.
Right.
And the people who are like, no, man, I want to see this in fucking theaters because I've been waiting for it. I think those same people would still go to the theaters in May. Probably. Like, I think the cross section, the people are like, I really want to see it in theaters, but I refuse to go to a theater until July. I think that's a super small number.
I agree, but that cross-section might still get you $10 to $15 million.
See, but I don't think they're going to end up losing dollars because it'll be $30 on Disney Plus. Yeah, like, maybe, those people, maybe. That small cross-section.
But see, you get $30, you get four or five people at your house watching it, and you don't get ticket sales for all of them. That's where they're losing their money.
Yeah, but you also don't have to pay the theater. Like, that's direct to them. I bet that's pretty much a wash on the Disney end.
That might be. That's good.
It doesn't boost the numbers. But I bet they're internal. For every ticket sold at the theater, they might get 20% of it.
Sure.
Like, I bet Disney is only getting, best case scenario, $3 per viewer in the theater.
Yeah. You think it's like record sales, basically? Like, you get a 15, 20% of every album sold?
They have to pay an exhibition fee to the theaters.
Of course, of course.
And the theaters are dictating their own prices and shit. So, like, I think I'd be willing to bet the $30 directly in their pocket, even if there's six people watching it that would pay for a ticket, I bet that's still a wash for them and on their bottom line.
Sure, sure. I can see that.
But yeah, it seemed silly to me to do the push and that. Like, I would understand if they were like, no, man, we're not fucking with Disney Plus. We're staying steadfast on that. We're going back to July. I could understand that train of thought.
Oh, me too.
But like, if you're going to do Disney Plus at premium access, fuck it, man. Keep that shit in May.
Yeah.
And it also, I think part of it is no one wants to take the risk of being the first big movie in the theater.
Yeah, that's
But someone's got to. And it kind of feels like Black Widow's the right movie to be that test model.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Regardless of whether it comes out in the theater or whether it doesn't, I feel like at this point, Black Widow's going to suffer from just too much anticipation.
It is. Black Widow's going to suffer from what Falcon and Winter Soldier
is. There's no way it's going
to
live up to
hype. We as Marvel fans have moved on to the next phase.
Right.
We're already talking about Doctor Strange. Right. We're talking about Spider-Man. We're talking about Eternals.
Same way New Mutants came out. Everybody wanted it for 2 years. It came out. No one talked about it.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Yeah.
It never happened. Did it come out? No one really knows.
It's hitting HBO Max next week.
Yeah. So I'll watch it there. Maybe then I'll watch it. Right, exactly.
But yeah, like I think Black Widow is going to suffer from that. So it seems like that's the movie to find out on because you've already got a sunk cost.
Yeah.
You know, like it's already in this weird cycle. So like let Shang-Chi then be the one that's like, all right, this is now our new thing that you're excited about and you're already in this magical train of mind. Let that be July.
Right.
I don't know. Clearly, these people are very fucking good at making money.
Right.
And clearly, I am not.
They've got to figure it out. Yeah.
So I guess they have a model.
So do
but it
you
doesn't
do.
Make yeah. as much sense to me.
That's
that,
right.
That logic feels a little off to me.
What else did I have on here? I watched Invincible. I watched the first episode.
I didn't get there yet.
I think the first three or four released.
I think that the Amazon model is three on the first day right. And then every Friday following.
Yeah. So I got through one and a half. They're like 45-minute episodes a piece. So I'm watching them last night after I watched Falcon Winter Soldier. First one moves slow.
Okay.
Like you're 30 minutes in and you're like, this feels – am I going to finish this? And then all of a sudden it changes. Like it's really like a – like 30 minutes into the show and then the Invincible – pops up, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like
it's like a 30-minute cold open.
Yes, it really is because you kind of learn about, you know, cause I don't know if you know, did you read the comic at all?
No.
Invincible is really about, basically like the son of Superman kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So there's a superhero. He's from another planet. He meets a woman when he comes here, falls in love. They have a kid. It's him. Who's Steven Yeun from Walking Dead?
Okay.
He's 16, 17, somewhere in there. Powers haven't kicked in yet. He's, you know, his dad's feeling like maybe he's not going to get his powers. Mm. Kind of feels like disappointed in him. There's another like Avengers type superhero group that all look remarkably like people you know. Like there's one guy who looks just like Batman. You know what I mean? It's like all kinds of that. They all have the same kind of things. And then he's the kid's emptying trash to the burger joint, throws the trash into the dumpster, and it goes into outer space. So boom, he's got his powers. And then, you know, starts learning how to fly and all that kind of stuff. And then that's basically when you get the Invincible.
Okay.
You know? So you kind of go through that all shit. And then next thing you know, the dad, which I've read the book, so I kind of know what's going on. But they could change it because it's a thing people do in Walking Dead. You know, they'll change it around. Goes into the superhero's lair, like the calls them, you know, whatever. And kills them all. Just fucks them all up. Like, and it's animation, but... it's very bloody. It's, you know, it's graphic. Twists one lady's Wonder Woman type, twists her head around, you know. So he twists her head around, snaps the neck kind of thing. She pukes and then falls over, you know. There's a Flash guy. He grabs him as he's flying by, smashes his head. His eyes are popping out. He gets like the other Superman-y type guy. Gets him down to his knees, gives him like karate chop to the head, just slices off his head. It's fucking brutal.
Holy shit.
But then all of a sudden, you know, he took a beating the whole time too. So then he falls down in a coma. So then the SHIELD group shows up and they think some big bad just came in and did this to everybody. So
and
they,
this no, was the only guy who could survive.
No one knows what's going on or anything like that. They call the kids, the kid and his wife, and they go to see their dad who's in a coma and all the kind of stuff. And then something happens in the city. And the kid has to become a superhero. So then he goes and... So that's kind of how the first episode ends. His dad's in a coma. He killed all the superheroes. We don't know why. We don't know... Was someone else controlling him? Nothing like that. And then his kid goes off and saves the city from some guy who's, you know, blowing up whatever.
Huh.
It's pretty fun. It was fun. It was a fun ride.
I'm here for that.
It was a fun ride. If you can get through the first 20, 25 minutes of that first episode, just know it's going to kick in. And from there, it's some different ride.
Okay.
It's a little story, and then boom, it's a ride.
I'll find out about that.
Yeah. I'm digging it. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch the first three or four here, and I think it keep my interest. I'm digging it.
You know what I'm most excited about happening soon? There was an announcement 2 days ago. A companion podcast is coming out. Rachel Bilson is doing a rewatch of the OC and giving me companion.
Oh, wow.
Companion commentary. Rachel Bilson is giving me a commentary track on the OC, which is everything that 16-year-old me wanted.
Sure.
And it's everything 33-year-old me still wants. I am as excited about it right now as I would have been at 16.
I don't know why more people haven't done that during this whole pandemic.
Right. It starts, Zach Braff did it for Scrubs starting in the pandemic.
Well, I watched
him and Donald Faison. And it was fucking awesome. Like, I loved Scrubs. I listened to almost all of it.
Pam and
Angela.
They started actually before the pandemic, but it got bigger during the pandemic, watching the Office episodes and things like that. Yeah, I would. I mean, one of my favorite things about DVDs was commentary.
Was commentary tracks.
I loved commentary tracks. I just
There's
nothing better than sitting there, smoking a joint, drinking a beer, and listening to them bullshit about how the movie was made.
Right.
Like fun, like you know, fun stories. The Mallrats one was my favorite of all time.
For sure,
it's a great one. That's when Ben was still Ben, and they were having a great old time. You could tell. Jay was still probably fucked up on heroin, having a great time.
Right.
But yeah, I wish. I mean, there's so many of those things. I don't even half the time. Like, I loved the Mr. Show commentaries.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't even really talk about the fucking show.
Right.
It's them,
just
and
them
having a good time, bullshitting about whatever. And that's the best part about it.
Well, and that's what I think about. Like, say the Scrubs one, for example. When I take a show that I love as much as I love Scrubs or The OC, but there's, you know, in Scrubs' case, there's 9 fucking seasons. You know, like that's when seasons were 20 episodes long. You know, like that's 500 fucking episodes, damn near.
Right.
And not 200 episodes.
Yeah. Math. You're an art teacher. It's okay.
Right. But like, so since I've watched that show enough times, it's like, all right, I know what are my 15 or 20 favorite episodes of the show. Cool. Mm-hmm. So now I already know when the podcast comes out, like, This is one that I can't wait to listen to because I know it has this it has this daydream sequence in it that I think is going to be a really funny conversation.
Right.
And I can jump around. It'll be the same thing. This OC one comes out. It's like, sweet. I can't wait for the fucking Chrismica episode.
Sure.
I can't wait for the Lonely Hearts Club.
Yeah.
Like, that's some shit that's going to be like, yes, man.
Right.
Or like when if they're going to bring someone as a guest, like, oh, you're going to give me Peter Gabriel. Let Sandy tell me something about anything.
See, you get so pumped up for that. Now I want Zach Morris to do like Saved by the Bell commentary.
Right.
You know, I remember this episode. I had just banged Lars Voorhees. I told Screech to fuck off. And then I filmed an episode. But any of those old shows when I was a kid, I would love that.
Yeah.
I would love that.
Yeah.
Well, not all of them. Most of them. A lot of them you probably couldn't do today. They just don't travel well.
Right. Well, and like, time has passed that, like, do they even remember the stories at this point?
I forget. I think, actually, to bring it back to the beginning, who interrupted us, I was talking with Sean Gallagher the other day about, like, TV shows and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I forget how we got on the subject, but I was talking about Perfect Strangers. Remember Perfect Strangers? Did you know that one? It was only on for a couple years.
Uh-uh.
I think I've talked about it before. It's not a great show, but, you know, it's the typical fish out of water. Did you ever see Beverly Hills Cop?
Yes.
You know the art dealer?
Yes.
Like, get the fuck out of here. Oh, no. Balky Baltakamas was the guy's name in Perfect Strangers. So he was the actor who played a foreign guy who came to live with his cousin in New York. So, you know, fish out of water.
Okay.
But doing a Yakov Smirnoff-esque kind of accent. And, you know, just that alone could make it today.
No way.
I mean, it wasn't racist or anything like that, but it was just some white guy doing a stupid accent of, like, a country that does not real. You know what I mean? It's like one of those kind of, but I loved it. I loved that show. It was on TGIF. It was like right after Family Matters or something like that. I loved it. Quick funny side note. I went to the Muni a couple years ago and saw, what play was it? It was like a King Lear or something along the, I can't remember exactly. No, it was Camelot. It was Camelot, actually. It wasn't Balky, but the other main guy from Perfect Strangers was the lead. I'm sitting here watching it. I'm like,
no way.
I fucking know this guy.
At the Muni?
At the Muni. I'm like, I'm getting through the book. I'm like, oh, he's in Perfect Strangers. I know that guy. And of course, the people we're with at the time was Jessica's boss, who's now a judge. You know what I mean? And I'm like, did you guys see Perfect Strangers?
I'm sure that went over well.
If you knew this guy, you would be like, that's a good question to ask. So her former boss, I can't believe I brought this up. I had to tell you this before. Her former boss, great dude.
Yeah.
He's a judge now. Been a judge for a few years. Great guy. Used to be a professional wrestler.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. I didn't know it for like the first year that Jess worked for him.
That's
And then
awesome.
I was talking something about wrestling. And he said, oh, yeah, I used to go to the Chase all the time. I'm like, oh, yeah, well, who'd you see? No, I used to wrestle. Huh? I mean, he's not huge, but he's a big. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I have to chase. I'm like, oh, man. So ever since then, we've been buddies.
Fast friends.
Oh, my God.
Fast friends.
And, of course, Jessica's in the back rolling her eyes like, oh.
I can't believe I can't escape it.
I know. I know. So, yeah, and back in the 70s, early 80s, he was a wrestler.
Nice.
Yep. Yep. He said he wrestled like Harley Race a couple times and shit like that. So, yeah.
Oh, shit.
Legit, man.
Yeah.
Anyways. Once again, worlds colliding.
Yeah.
It's good times. Suicide Squad trailer.
So is that our final piece, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
That real sneak attack.
Yes. Well done.
It's like...
Did you see what... I think James Gunn is the one who put it on there. He's like... Maybe somebody else did it, because this would have been tooting his own horn. It was like... this is what real creative freedom looks like, or something along those lines. And like, yeah, there you go. It's a shot at him, but it's legit. It's legit. And it looks... fun. It looks fun as fuck.
It looks like it's exactly what I need it to be.
Yeah,
you know, agreed. Like it looks like all of these characters are expendable. 70% of them are going to die.
Absolutely. Yep.
I don't need a sequel.
Yep.
It makes sense. Like, all right, they're trying to rescue Harley Quinn. So all of a sudden it's like, okay, now I understand how it's a sequel. Now right. I see where right. this all fits in together.
Right. Yep.
This is a new Suicide Squad because the other ones are all dead. Because right. why wouldn't they be dead?
Right.
Like... It King Shark ripping people in half,
which is Ron Funches, right?
It's Ron Funches in the Harley Quinn show. It is
that's right. That's right.
What's
that's
his
right.
name?
That's right. Yeah, I knew who this is too.
He is Steve Agee.
Yes, yes, interchangeable.
Yeah. Kind of
right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's gonna be
Ron
awesome.
Has a different laugh. That's about it.
Yeah,
yeah. I used to follow. Speaking of Steve Agee, he used to be on, and he still is. Instagram. Or no, I guess this is probably Snapchat. He would just, you know, he lives in LA. He would just pull up outside this restaurant that was just called Baba Ganoush, right?
Uh-huh.
And he would just take his phone out and video the outside of the restaurant and do like ads for, come on down to Baba Ganoush where we, and he would just every, like for 30 minutes straight, like, you know, 30 seconds here. It was the best thing.
No way.
Like someone would be walking by with something. Well, we got homeless guys with one shoe on, you know, shit like it was just. Oh,
I feel like Steve Agee is.
But once he started doing Star Wars, that kind of faded.
But so I think Steve Agee is like the poor man's Brian Posehn.
Sure, sure. I think Brian Posehn is the poor man's Brian Posehn. That's not a knock on Brian Posehn.
You love Brian Posehn.
He's one of my favorites of all time. But
Brian Posehn is the poor man's Brian Posehn.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay.
I didn't say this earlier, but I should have. When we're talking about Bo Burnham, how much we love Bo Burnham.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why I'm bringing it back. But I thought of this the other day. And most of his comedy is, you know, songs and shit like that, which is great. But he opened his last special with just, my girlfriend has a weird, what'd she say? My girlfriend has a weird fetish. She likes to dress up like herself and act like a fucking bitch all the time. I just love that so much. And it sticks with me all the time. I'm sorry. But when we talk about Bo Burnham, I had to say it or it would not come out of my head. It was just stuck in there. I couldn't get it out. So, but no, Brian Posehn is the shit.
Yeah. No, I the Suicide Squad's going to be super fun.
I can't wait for it.
That's going to be...
I feel like that, with everything that we know about it, I feel like there's going to be something so surprising in it that we don't know.
Maybe?
I just have that feeling. Maybe not. Maybe it's all out there, but...
You know, I think that's possible, but I think it would require Warner Brothers to have any fucking clue what they're doing with the DC Universe, and I don't think they know.
They don't. Because, you know, one day you'll see, they're talking about maybe making the Snyder Cut canon, and then they're like, no canon. We don't even want connected movies. And then it's all over the map. So
I wish they would stop doing connected movies.
Yeah.
You can do movies that
maybe two or three that are
sequels
type whatever, but making everything connect like Marvel did, you're too far gone to do that at this point.
You know, like I think like say for example, we know Margot Robbie has killed it as Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
If Harley Quinn needs to show up in anything, you're casting Margot Robbie.
Right,
makes sense.
Right,
but like. You just don't need that. Like their shit doesn't work as well interconnected,
right?
Because I think they're messing with the least interesting of their characters most of the time.
Yeah,
and they're just trying too hard to play catch up. And it's like just do if you do the thing that you're good at, it will make you money.
That's right.
Like it will.
That's right.
And that's all you're asking for is dollars. That's so right. Just ignore the other shit. And like, if you want to make another Justice League movie, fucking recast all the heroes. It doesn't need to play into the other movies. Right. It just doesn't. Like, you can just do that.
Speaking of that, did you see the fan cut where someone put Green Lantern into the Snyder cut instead of Martian Manhunter there at the end?
No.
Would have been so much better.
It would have been.
Why not? Yeah.
That's really, you know what? That's really the thing is, why the fuck not?
Right.
Why didn't Zack Snyder do that?
Right.
Because you know you're not getting, whether you get a sequel or not, you know none of the Snyder cut really fucking matters.
Right.
And like having Martian Manhunter show up there doesn't really matter.
Nope.
So like, and you already got to see Martian Manhunter earlier. So why not play with all the fucking toys?
At least,
for sure, you could get Ryan Reynolds to be in on that joke to be like,
in a heartbeat.
Bro, I need you for 2 hours,
yeah.
One day,
right.
Just for this laugh.
Yep, absolutely.
Like that's what we need to make
fucking
happen.
Wink to the camera, if nothing else. I mean,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. It could have even just been a green light shining.
Right.
And, who's on my porch? And, you know what I'm saying? Anyways, Snyder Cut was still better than what we got originally. So
for sure.
We're doing all right. We're doing all right. I got everything checked off my list.
Yeah, man. I think that's all we got for this week. I do have to acknowledge, said there was going to be a big announcement on Wednesday, and then after a few phone calls, that had to be pushed back one more week. So I promise... next week when we talk, I will be able to tell you the full story.
False promises.
Of what's going on.
You'll be very excited
on Wednesday, and I can break down the reality of why this announcement has been pushed back twice now.
That's right.
And you will say, you know what, John? It's worth it. You're not full of shit.
They won't say all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can hope. I can hope.
It can still be worth it, and you can be full of shit.
A little column A, a little column B.
That's right. All right, guys. Thank you.
See you.